Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamblett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review NXT, but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamblett and Sidgwick to review the Go Home episode ahead of NXT TakeOver In Your House this weekend. What did you think of it, Hamblett?
I thought it was a bit rubbish, to be honest. I didn't think it was... I didn't think it was a hugely effective Go Home show, but then that's not really NXT stock in trade anyway. The angles just peak when they peak. They're booking a television show, and takeovers in the pandemic especially often seem to appear as a little bit of a, not as an inconvenience, that wouldn't be fair, but like the matches are fairly clearly laid out and there's nothing they really do on these last weeks before the pay-per-views to heat them up. I don't think much hit in this episode. I was like, lately there's always been at least one major angle a week that I think has been like genuinely impressive. There's often like now two or three matches that I cannot wait for us to talk about and luxuriate in some of the details of. And I didn't get that from any of the matches. And I thought the big ideas for the angles weren't big enough. So I don't know. Like, a feeling of emptiness sort of defines this one for me.
I experienced two legitimate epiphanies watching this show, right? I had a paradigm shift of a moment when I came to the realization that what I like most about NXT is got nothing to do with what you immediately identify with those three letters. I love the wacky episodic sports entertainment. I used to say all the time, it's just a bit of boilerplate, generic rubbish, in a polished veneer, packaged nicely in videos before you get the blowaway matches on TakeOver. Like, I'm so into the index thing. Like, I legitimately, it's the first thing I want to watch. I want to watch the YouTube things and not watch wrestling. My paid for service. that's what I'm into. I really like the daftness, the Cameron Grimes, the index stuff. I like, it's unfashionable, but NXT is kind of nailing in some respects what I still like, what little I like about sports entertainment. So that's good. That's good. I'm into some of the things on NXT. Earnestly, that's good. It's a shame, however, that literally I think Vic Joseph, I cannot listen to him. I'm sorry, like, I don't want to go two-footed on the guy, but he's actively at this point, possibly more than Mauro. In fact, for me, more than Mauro Ranallo, ruining this show. At least with Mauro, and he was completely self-indulgent by the end. But at least he had that voice. At least he had the gravitas of a guy who can call combat sports. And his very voice, no matter what words that voice formed, were ridiculous and immersion-breaking and laughable. But he still had the voice that got this over as, it's a bit overwhelming and it's hurting my senses, but, you know, I can believe him. He's got a certain authority because of his background. There's a moment in the show, I can't even remember the match. and it all plays into each other, which is a significant problem. Where, you know, that spot where someone's in the corner, someone's rushing into them with a move, and they lift their boot up. It is just a transition from defense to offense. That's all it is. It's not exciting. It's remarkably nondescript. It's just a thing to do to transition from one part of the match to the next. And Vic Joseph, like, screaming in my ear, "Oh, that boot in his face!" It's like, shut up! Shut your mouth! Maybe if you do that, like, you heard me. I find it a painful thing. If you just went on a boot there, and he's got a boot there, maybe have like an incidental conversation or something. A boot to the face. Like, that's the voice you're meant to reserve for something that's meant to be cool and dramatic and like going to decide the course of the match. It just screams at me all the time. I can't deal with it. So it's a shame that when I realized I've become a certain, I've accepted what this new NXT is and I've grown to like bits of it, it ruins it.
I completely agree with that, you know, because there was one moment on the show where his failure to be able to go up the gears accordingly, not just in every match, but across an entire show. It was something like Michael Cole used to be rotten at when he took over from Jim Ross in that 1998-99 period, because everything is hot. But Jim Ross suddenly made you realize how he was able to measure his responses to the mid-card stuff versus the headlines, and Michael Cole couldn't. Like, if you watch WrestleMania 15, every single match is the main event as far as Michael Cole's tone and register is concerned. Vic Joseph was guilty of that. Most notably for me in this episode, when he delivered a line that I would say legitimately, I've been waiting my whole life to say this, let's go to Doc Hendricks in the Slam Jam. Like, no, I've been literally waiting my whole life to be able to say a line like that about a modern wrestling show. Vic Joseph said that and I didn't believe him because he had been screaming over boots and headlocks and everything else. That by the time he came to say something that you would want to, but like, I don't care if Vic Joseph isn't a wrestling fan. Like, that doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me that he might not have been watching the new generation as closely as I was. I just want to believe in the moment that he was. And that was a line obviously fed to him to put over the excitement of the nostalgia of In Your House, which they've dialed way back on this year. And I think the builders suffered for it. And he didn't have the energy for it, because he'd expended it on meaningless stuff in several matches and other segments up to this point. And that was, yeah, I noticed him failing to stick that specific landing, and it'll almost definitely be tied in to that, the fact that he's already hit his highest decibel and there's nowhere else for him to go.
I've got to say, I quite enjoyed last night's NXT. I completely agree with what you say regarding Vic Joseph, though. I did enjoy last night's NXT, partially because of everything that Sid alluded to there. You've got the bloody pre-show presented by Everrise, which I don't know where they're like, you know, we're one side of things with like Hit Row, and then I see everyone else, like certain people who review NXT, going, oh, bloody hell, they come have Everrise. I genuinely don't know how you're not on board with this sort of thing. Cameron Grimes, I thought, was sensational yet again, and I'd quite like the build as well to take over for certain matches. The extra match they've added, I know it wasn't the one you wanted, Hamflet, but I think it's going to be a match of the night contender without question. And yeah, two huge returns, surprise returns, non-advertised returns on last night's show as well. But we'll get into it and we'll break all this up. We started with Oney Lorcan versus Austin Theory. They led into it by saying, oh, they bloody won't stop fighting, so we're just starting the show with them. No idea who I was meant to be supporting in this. Wasn't really given a reason to support either of them, but thought they had a back and forth encounter, chopped the crap out of each other early on. In the midst of the match, as Pete Dunne's heading out, Oney Lorcan trips Austin Theory on the apron. There was a mad point where they're on the top rope, or Theory jumps up to the top rope, springboards effectively into a Spanish fly. That was brilliant, in my opinion. Johnny Gargano came out to even the odds in terms of people standing in people's corners. And then, of course, immediately starts brawling with Pete Dunne, who he's going to face in that fatal five-way at TakeOver at the weekend. All the officials pour out. Big, big brawl. That distracts Austin Theory. That allows Lorcan to hit him in the turnbuckle, give him that chicken wing suplex thing, and get the pinfall victory. Sid, what did you make to the opener?
The fact that the only vivid memory I have of it is that incredible Spanish fly spot. Like, wrestling is so, like, of a broadly great standard of excitement these days that so much of what happens blurs into the next, and very rarely do I see a spot that, like, just pops my tits off. And that spot popped my tits off. I thought it was so well done, vision and execution. That's my abiding memory of the match. I think for me, it got a little bit drab, like physical and committed in the work their arses off, but like not in a way that was particularly gripping or excitement. Maybe that wasn't necessarily a reflection of the work, but like just the stature of both guys and the dynamic as well, like the two heels. Like it kind of failed before it entered the ring, but they worked, they grafted to sort of transcend that. And I had spot pop my tits off. Just about worked for me as a match. It's a storyline advancement heading into the main event segment and a build that just felt a bit tacked on.
Yeah. I actually think like Sidgwick's going to be a bit kinder than me on this one. Like I thought this was quite admirable work that was ultimately undermined by the like lack of good story and the characterizations of both men and NXT's continuing problem with blurring the heel and babyface lines far too much. I know everybody out there was a heel, so that I'm not looking for like a single babyface, but that creates a problem, doesn't it? Because you don't really have anybody to root for. We thought maybe only Larkin might work this more as a babyface. I don't really think he did. I don't think either of them did, nor do I think Johnny Gargano or Pete Dunne tried to in the brawl. If anything, it was probably Gargano that was the one, because he's obviously just such a natural babyface, looked most heroic out of all four of these. And you're obviously not supposed to receive him like that at all. And then he comes out in the main event being the way is Johnny Gargano. So that's, you know, that wasn't the intention. Yeah, like an all right idea, but I don't think they went far enough with the agenting of the match or the run-ins that they were trying to sell for the main event to just establish a dynamic that could really make you care. And yeah, the work, like all the in-ring goes missing when you haven't got any of that. And like, it just did a little bit for me here.
Well, thanks, Tuts. Next, we got the vignette with LA Knight. The reason I say that is that's the huge boy popper that he said in there after coming out of the shower and being given a robe, singing the Million Dollar Man theme. It cribs, effectively, isn't it? He's got two women there who are just happy to be there, smiling and laughing. That everything he says, they're in the hot tub. He's saying, oh, I'm going to ruin Cameron Grimes' life and embarrass him in front of his idol. They laugh and he goes, right, that's enough. And then he gets in a sports car and drives off. Wonderful stuff, this. I mean, the Cameron Grimes one was obviously better, Hamflirt, but I enjoyed this.
Yeah, they've sort of just about got there, I think, with LA Knight and Cameron Grimes. It's a state, like, again, I'm not watching it. It was that, like, Cedric Noyes to me the week. I'm going, huh. Like, I'm not, like, sat there pissing myself laughing at anything. But I don't hate it.
I wasn't. Thanks, Dutz, I got to say.
Your delivery of it's even better, which is, I don't know, maybe that's an insult. I don't know. Like, it's, all of this was all right. I don't know. I think they've explored this idea about as much as they can. I thought that, like, In the Ring with the Ladder was honestly better than the vignettes for me.
You know what I think it is, and you've got to sort of give credit to LA Knight for this, is he obviously went so far, but he always knew he's not completely the straight man, but he does have to be more straight-laced for Cameron Grimes to be the whole, well, we'll get to more of it when we get to him and that interaction when they pull in, because I thought that was a wonderful dichotomy, word of the day, toilet paper. What do you think, Sidge?
Honestly, man, on the strength of the two vignettes in the segment, I could do without a ladder match. It's so NXT.
It's been so long, Sidge. We haven't had one for, like, what, 2 months?
I was actively pissed off. Like, the presentation of it was immaculate, right? So I'm not into the stipulation. I think it's a desperate reach to do a great match. It's like, well, why? You've got something more important than a great match. How many great matches do you see on NXT, quote unquote? Like, just let them have a solid little storytelling comedy match, if anything, given the tone of the feud. So I worry that it's going to go in a weird, ill-fitting direction on the show itself. But my God, across these vignettes in that segment, that's my favorite NXT feud of the year. Like, legitimately, you've got a likable dickhead, and the fact that he's so likable, it makes LA Knight look like a detestable dickhead. And like, a toots is the best heel word of all time. In a bitch world, in a bitch world, everyone says, bitch, kick you, nice, bitch, right? Toots is the best heel word, like, ever. It's immaculate. I'd pop my tits off at that. It's what a dickhead thing to say. Just reducing that very reductive, awful word that he made funny. Black comedy is good. And, yeah, just pop my tits off. Like, it's a match I'm also looking forward to a takeover by some distance at this point.
Definitely need to get some What Culture merch that just says on the front, in quote, like, quoted to you, Michael Sidgwick, 2021, in a bitch world, on the back, be a toots. I'd wear it. I'd buy it. I always try to alternate who goes first on this, but you'll forgive me, Sidge, to going straight to Michael Hamplot on this for the return of Doc Hendricks. He was there running down the card for TakeOver like it's mid-90s. He's doing a slam jam. Ridiculous, this, Hamplot.
Yeah, lovely. Really nice. I found myself siding with Vince McMahon here because in 1995, I'd have cut his hair and shaved his beard as well. The scruffy tramp. Like, Michael P.S. Hayes does not suit the presentation of the new generation. And you could see that apparently they tried for years to get Michael Hayes to, like, turn on the old Doc Hendricks to one night only. And he hasn't done it. He hasn't done it. And they finally got it. And this is, like, the most fitting place for him to do it as well. Like, a very, very new generation character for a new generation theme show. Lovely, love that noise he does, even though I imagine he absolutely detests it. So, like, I felt like I could see that, like, the stick that he was being poked with, go on, do doc stuff. And he was like, well, I'm wearing my own hat. Fine, wear your own ugly hat then. Like, so it was only like half in from Michael Hayes. Yeah, like, this gives me a bit of hope where I haven't had much in the last few weeks that they are not completely out of ideas. A couple of weeks ago, it was just, Todd Pettengill's going to be there. And then there's not really been much else in the way of acknowledging that this is in your house compared to what there was last year. And they paid off a lot last year. They gave you plenty, real, real, like festival of fan service at that show. This was a teaser that at least they're still switched on to that this year, and there'll be more stuff on the night as well.
Yeah, for a long while. Stop getting in your house wrong. Yeah. They got it right with this. Just, I can't really say much about it. It was just nice. And, you know, Michael Hayes is dick. So if you need to like him in the context of your fiction, fair play, because he's a total knob.
How are you, just to go on a complete tangent, how are you two? You're obviously both wrestling encyclopedias. When you're very much, I have them too, you're very much more casual wrestling fans, get things wrong. Like, oh, just loved it when The Rock beat Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 15. And you're like, oh, well, that didn't happen, did it?
I personally don't mind. It's getting bad opinions. I'm not a great fast guy. It's a take thing. I'm honestly going to put myself forward for the Ombudsman of Wrestling Twitter. I feel like the rule, it's out of control on that app. There needs to be a moderator to see who's not allowed to have opinions. And I'll be your dictator.
My answer to that question, Will Bourne, is my outward patience and understanding is masking my inner fury. You know, in Wile E. Coyote cartoons where he swallows one of those big round bombs and then just hear the explosion go off in his stomach and he tries to no-sell it. That's me. Every time anybody gets a tiny bit of trivia wrong. Like, every single time. Every time. Without fail. I just say, oh, yeah, it's all right. It's not a big deal. It's the biggest deal there is. But I have to pretend it isn't.
I'm like that when people get like an analogy, not analogies, but like cliches wrong. You know, like, oh, We are cooking on all cylinders now. Well, you're not, are you? On gas now. You're firing on all cylinders, prick. I've got
a mate who just doesn't get sayings. It's like, how hard is that? It's like the shortest of shorthand language to like get a point across. And he just doesn't get sayings. Just doesn't get them. So that's because he said something. I was like, that's the pot calling the kettle black. So what does that mean?
He got Ron Burgundy when he's like, well, when in Rome, please continue.
I don't know why he was confused. That was cream.
Anyway, where are we? Oh, yeah.
Speaking of kettles, one of my friends at uni once thought the phrase was a kettle of figs. And then, well, it's a different kettle of figs, isn't it?
What? It's
what? But then the thing is, you're given kettle of fish, and then again, stubbornly, they won't accept. Well, it doesn't make any more sense than kettle of fish. I don't know what the big deal is. You know, when they're trying to like say, I don't know, it's fine. Probably just the same. I'll probably say both.
But even if you don't know the specific etymology, you know what it means.
Just accept it. It's not figs. You've got five people in the room telling you it's fish.
My kettle's cream. Oh my God.
The best one of those recently was well, my mum said, "That's a bit of a damp squid, isn't it?" Not the phrase, because damp squib is what you're looking for. But
damn dirty squid.
The missus yesterday said, "Tell you what, smoking like a fish." Right.
Still one in my house. Still one in my house these days. When you know, my wife, like, it was dark or something. She said, "I can't see a bat," and that has stuck to this day. I can't see a bat. Well, isn't it? And I can. Neither can I.
He's not in Peru.
My mum once called my brother and sister stupid with an apostrophe S. And they've never been allowed to live that one down.
Oh, right. Anyway, Santos Escobar is in the ring. He's got Legado del Fantasma there with him. They recap what happened in the main event of last week with the tag title match. And he calls out Bronson Reed for getting involved in it. Bronson Reed interrupts him, comes out, and just keeps showing the footage of him sandwiching Escobar into the barricade and basically going, "I think I made you crap yourself," basically. Escobar says, "All right, get in the ring and do it again." So Bronson Reed goes, "Okay," goes to get in the ring. Gets in, MSK run down to even the numbers. And Escobar challenges Reed and MSK to a trios match. Winner take all the titles are on the line, the tag titles and the North American Championship. It's going to go down at TakeOver. They agree. And then the little scabs that are MSK go, "Can we have that footage of him getting squashed again one more time?" I tell you what a match to be added to TakeOver this, Sige.
Yeah, I'm way more into the match than the way it was built because it's earned. I'm going to use that word in a while. It's earned. They've sort of converged the two storylines quite well, quite nicely. And, you know, theoretically, there'll be way more drama for literally every single pinfall, given that it's all on the line. I don't want to see another screen in pro wrestling that saved in my life again after the Bayley thing on SmackDown. So I get it. They are there. But it just made Bronson Reed look more obnoxious than anything else. But yeah, the match.
Yeah, it's without belts. It's a TV main event with them. It's a takeover match, and they've figured that out at least. And I like that. I know though, like, it's all a bit obvious to me, but petrally, like, the champions aren't going to lose on Sunday. That's very clear. And if it wasn't already clear, you've got Hit Row and Legado del Fantasma having a stare down on the ramp to set up what's probably going to be like Hit Row's first like high profile scalp after the fact. So not only are the like Fantasma lads not going to win the belts, you're kind of seeing the next feud set up for them to lose as well, which not that that result was in any doubt, but you've kind of foreshadowed it there as well. Because everything
special as well.
And there's no heel babyface. I'll just turn to Phantasma babyface or something for the match because they can wrestle or whatever. It's just it's not really foreshadowing it because the result I don't think is in any doubt. But this was a little bit too on the nose, I thought.
Yeah, Hit Row came down and squared up to Legado del Fantasma because next up it was Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Killian Dane. Early on in the match, of course, Killian Dane is getting the better of Swerve Scott. He's trying to evade him, but Dane is a massive bastard who kicks the crap out of people. So what do they do? Scott goes to the outside. Top Dollar causes a distraction that allows Scott to take control with a sneak attack. Quite a few times that actually happened. In the end, Scott is fighting back, counters Dane, flatliner, jumping kick, but Dane just powers back into it. Then Ashanti the Adonis tries to interfere. Drake Maverick makes the save and then gets murdered by Top Dollar, hits him with a Death Valley driver on the apron. That distracts Dane, and that allows Scott to kick the head off Killian Dane's shoulders, this leaping single leg drop kick right to the face, and he got the 3 count off the back of that. Right decision. You know, yes, shenanigans, pamphlet, but yeah, all the right things here.
Yeah, I like this, and I think it's a pretty significant improvement for Scott having hit Raw. It's really tough on NXT to be a like work rate heel because you just stop being the heel. Like this happens all the time. It's one of the reasons why Adam Cole will be one of the most popular wrestlers as soon as his fans back. Just one of them, obviously, but like it happens with like so many heels on NXT that if your work is too good to be denied, it's really hard to get booed. Obviously, you can't really judge that at the moment, but you can judge the way the wrestlers are wrestling as to how the reactions might be. And I feel like Swerve with Hit Row, and this is a compliment to them, after myself not really buying the act, like they compliment him. He has suddenly got a great deal more confidence as a working heel, like summed up brilliantly by that finish, as you say. I like watching him be a villain now, whereas before when he was a heel, it felt very forced because they'd ran out of things to do with him. The heel turn was an acknowledgement that they'd failed with him as a babyface, that he'd lost once too often. Like, Swerve's great. I think we're all fans of him on here, but it just felt like he was completely flailing. And something for me in this match, again, maybe like credit a bit to Dane as a like a bit of an underrated babyface, maybe, because this Maverick act is like quite earnestly nice, and maybe like Killian Dane's got that in him as well. But I just really, really bought Swerve Scott as a proper heel for one of the first times here. Short as this was, I thought this was super effective for him.
I liked the work, but there was some goddamn plot holes like excavated on this goddamn show. Swerve's like really unique escapology, love that goddamn word, was like really quite thrilling to watch, really quite sound in the approach given the massive bastard on the other side of the ring. And really quite thrilling moments in the spaces between moves and how to work a big man. All of that was good. Like, you know, consistent. Listen to the AEW review. If you're going to do relentless interference, at least, like, you've got, there's more than one person, there's more than top dollar there. Have B-Fab distract the referee, allowing, was this no DQ and I've just missed it?
No.
Right, okay. I didn't think so. B-Fab distracts the referee. No, don't do that, top dollar. Top dollar has just wrecked Killian Dane. Like, it was just right in front of the ref. Mm. It's like, right, okay. Maybe in this universe, it doesn't matter that much. But it was very, very blatant. Activity, interference, chicanery, in full view of the ref. And, you know, I've got a lot of leniency towards that, a lot of latitude. But at the same time, look what happened in the finish of Kai and Ember Moon. Mm. Just, you know, it's the same show you're writing here and you're getting this stuff wrong. So that was kind of annoying in itself because I've been exhausted by that particular brand of storytelling. But at least do it so that it's not so blatant. Like, excessive and blatant are two different things. I've been getting one too much, and tonight I got the other.
We saw Poppy arriving at the building, and then we cut, of course, to Candice LeRae about to get interviewed, annoyed at Poppy getting all the attention. Well, whilst they're trying to talk to Candice LeRae, her partner Indy Hartwell interrupts, despite how angry LeRae is with Poppy. Hartwell is certain she saw what happened last week. She saw the tear roll down Dexter Lumis's face as he listened to 80s power ballads. He's still in love with her, and she runs off to go and find him. More on that in due course. And then we got the other half of the campaign to be the $1 million man for Ted DiBiase, this time from Grimes. He's doing a cannonball into a pool. He's cutting a promo with two legs splayed either side of his head. He tries to do the $1 million, lighting a cigar and smoking it with a $100 bill or whatever it was. Chokes on that. Oh, I can't really drink the scotch. But he promises, despite what you've seen, to take the $1 million man's legacy to the moon, Michael Sidgwick. Love this.
Just tremendous. Like, if they go with him for the $1 million title, and this is the player, it's not just because of my fantasy booking, but I think, like, what a good, slow-moving, but powerful vehicle with which to turn him face. Like, he's the whole beat and the punchline, and these were the better punchlines that we've seen in recent weeks, is that he's crap at being rich. absolutely crap at being rich, and he's about to try and be rich, and he's about to become rich, one would hope, at TakeOver. And the idea is going to be that, it's not the promotion to tell the story, but still, the idea could be that he's going to just abandon the pretenses of being wealthy and rich and realize that's not for me because people like you are dickheads and I'm sick of trying to be one, etc., etc. This is all months down the line. But what a fabulously funny way of articulating that potential story beat. Like, he's crap at being rich. He's just a naive idiot. I was pissing myself at this. Like, this is the earnestly funniest I've seen Cameron Grimes be in ages. Just, I love him.
I thought it was amazing that a wrestling company could acknowledge that these are the habits of arseholes rather than good people. Like, yeah. Genuine. Like, as Cedric points out, we're going to go down the line and go, I don't want to be like any of you. And that's what makes you a good guy. It just feels like wrestling doesn't say that out loud enough. So it was quite nice to have, like, Grimes struggling with these things and him very clearly be the one you're supposed to root for in the story. That was nice. It was funny, but, like, I was a little bit shocked. Like, hang on, like, Triple H wrote this, and, like, does he look in the mirror ever at the life he leads or the life he's led forever? Like, quite impressive, this.
Hamlet, what was the name of that bloke that we talked about a while back who won the lottery here in England?
Michael Carroll, as the tabloids called him, the Lotto Lout, because he bought quad bikes and scared his neighbours. Bought, like, giant chains and stuff. Papers were raging that, like, an angry working class guy had millions of pounds all of a sudden. Oh, dear. Good crack.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Next on NXT, it was meant to be Mercedes Martinez in a match. Actually, she did have the match, to be fair. She just got attacked by Xia Li before it. They brawl, separated by officials. Xia Li gets thrown over the barricade, and Mercedes Martinez goes, "Well, what was I here for?" "Oh, yeah, the match." Gets in. No idea who she's facing. Didn't get introduced or anything like that. Battered her. Knee strike, air raid crash. 1, 2, 3. She stares down the lens and she shouts, "Xia, you messed with the wrong woman." I mean, very basic stuff to lead to the match at TakeOver the weekend, Hamlet.
You say basic, but I love stuff like this. I don't think NXT does this enough. There is far too much tolerance in WWE and by extension NXT, as we'll get to in the main event of this show, tolerance of matches not meaning anything. And Mercedes Martinez ensured that wasn't the case, despite the fact that she'd just been in a fight. NXT did this less than WWE, but it happens enough. I'm so glad she got in the ring and she beat the jobber in 10 seconds because that's what she should be able to do in spite of what Xia Li did to her. It wasn't no selling the attack. It was trying to shake it off just enough to batter some loser and then get back to the main business at hand. And, like, really economical use of your television time to get this story over. I like this.
I didn't like it at all. I think it was an overcorrection because they've realised, right, Xylee is the one who's got the investment. Loads of TV time. She's the one getting the push. Mercedes Martinez has just lost a big title match. How do we heat her up? I'm seeing the wires when I'm watching this. Mm-hmm. And because I'm seeing the wires, it puts me off getting invested in the storyline. And it was just an overcorrection on how to make Mercedes Martinez look like a badass to the detriment of Xylee. With the idea being that, and I get the idea. The idea is when she actually beats Martinez at the Pape, it'll mean more than it might have on Tuesday. No, sorry, on Monday. I wasn't buying what they were selling, mate. Not at all.
Quick interview backstage with Breezango. Fantango just goes, oh, first question, do you like my shirt? And then they talk about Walter Imperium. Why is Walter so angry all the time? He's been German champion, I think they said, for 700 odd days. And they're like, no, UK champion. He's like, you know, what did they say? I think they said he was the European Bruno Sammartino or something like that. They said, regardless, we'll beat Imperium. We'll get back into the tag title picture. I'm not going to ask you what your thoughts on that, or you can touch on it briefly, because I want to get to the cringiest NXT segment I think I've ever seen this. So you've got Triple H and William Regal. They're backstage. They're with Poppy. And they're saying how much they're very happy to have her back here in NXT. Great to see her. Great to have her music yet again on NXT. And the new songs and the album, the LP or whatever it is that she's got. And it's just so still. He's like, so when's that album, as the young kids say, drop? And she goes, right now. And just presses a button on her cell phone. And he goes, oh, it's available to the WWE Universe right now on all major platforms. Incredible. Wow. You can download it. Download it now. Do it. Download it now. It's already awkward. And then who comes to save the day? But of course, Dexter Lumis. He walks in. He's made a picture of her. He shows it. She sort of goes, oh, this guy's a bloody serial killer. I'll give him a hug. Gives him a hug. Who should run in at that time? Michael Sidgwick. But one, Indy Hartwell. He's embracing another woman. What must she think? She runs off in tears. And Triple H says, that was awkward. You're telling me, Michael Sidgwick.
I can't dump on the Triple H thing that much, as much as I'm often so prepared to do so. People seem to like it, like his face. I actually saw his face on my Twitter timeline, so I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, people must have been into this. So, you know, it was what it was. It's Triple H doing the whole, and it's a cell phone and he doesn't get it, which is funny. So I'll take that from it, that he doesn't know like how technology or young people are like the future, the scary future that is doomed and works. It's funny. I like it, Sean Freud. It's a neat enough way to delay the wedding. It's all about the ever so many romantic misunderstandings to delay the wedding. Does it heal the serial killer Dexter Lumis to make him like fanny rat adjacent by having him like make a picture for another girl, but maybe just one artist expressing admiration for another artist and it's all platonic? Can't believe I'm doing headcanon on this. The law of index. I'm into the law of index when I'm making my own explanations up for the necessary plot developments to deepen people's resolve to see this get consummated, I guess. That's what, whatever. I just want to see a wedding. Everyone wants a bloody wedding. I'm going to wear a suit for that episode of NXT.
I don't know, yeah. I don't know if I was put off by the first bit to not enjoy the second. Triple H got his meme, as Sidgwick says. He got it. Almost never gets it. So he got his meme for the week, so he'll be pleased with that. Earlier in the show, this is probably pointless, but I'm going to pick out a few like plot holes with the Indy Hartwell Dexter Lumis story. Oh. Like, Indy Hartwell said, I saw, you know, it, like she was like brought back in by Dexter Lumis crying when he heard like her headphones blaring out those like 80s songs, right? So she's seen, having watched the show, she's seen that, me and Dexter are back on. So she goes looking for him and it, you know, et cetera. But then in the very same segment, like as soon as she'd left the room, Candice LeRae is like negging the whole relationship again. It's not even a thing. Why do people say it's a thing? And I know that's so that later on she could say, listen, Poppy, you're home wrecker. everybody knows Index is a thing. Like, we like Candice LeRae is being a hypocrite here, right? But like, Indy Hartwell's just told us that she's watching the show, so like, she should see this as well. And like, I don't like Cedric's berating himself for like doing all the headcanon. I'm berating myself for like wanting a bit more tighter writing of this whole thing. Like, I just, like, if is Indy Hartwell watching or not? Because she'd have watched those other weeks where Candice LeRae kept pulling down the shutters as Dexter Loomis like sort of hung around outside the locker room just trying to speak to her, and Candice LeRae was like the barrier between them.
Jeff Jericho, is it?
Not really. And like, drawing the picture, like Dexter Loomis just draws pictures for everybody, and as Indy Hartwell never seen anybody hug before. Like, I don't know. Triple H got his name. I thought this was pretty rubbish.
Indy's selling of it made it though. Like, yeah. She's absolutely,
yeah, she's really good. Like,
afraid to like try and capture the like the ugly crying bit. I'm not saying she's ugly, Christ's sake, don't take that out of context. But you know what I mean? Like the whole
totally like, committed. Totally committed.
Noises. Look at Indy Hartwell's noises.
it was just very difficult. The two worlds of Poppy. And I don't know what the combined age of William Regal and Triple H is, but yeah, it just, well, are they going to post an Instagram about it or what? I have no idea. Let's move on to the priceless announcement by the Million Dollar Man. Ted DiBiase's walking to the ring. He's got this briefcase with him. Cameron Grimes and LA Knight show up. They're negging each other, they're going back and forth as they pull up in their cars, and one of the security guards or valet or whatever it is of Ted DiBiase's saying, just get to the bloody ring, lads. And Cameron Grimes says, you look like a waiter begging for tips, you're broke. That's one of his comebacks. Again, LA Knight's trying to fight back, but he can't fight this tide. He says, you know, the only rich guy who lives under a bridge. And Cameron Grimes says, I'm so rich, I live under two bridges. And then the security valet bloke holds the door open and he goes, hey, thanks for getting the door. Take some money for your family. You ain't got no family. Anyway, they get into the ring. And DiBiase says, it's Sunday, it's the ultimate test. They've got to climb the ladder of success. At that point, he laughs and a bloody gold ladder comes down with dollar signs written on it. He indicates that there is going to be a ladder match and they go back and forth. Again, these two, LA Knight said he's head and shoulders above the rest. He should continue this legacy better than this bloody hillbilly. Grimes is furious with this, responds, rips off his jacket, takes off his watch. He says, take my money, take my fame, because I'm going to take the million-dollar legacy to the moon. And then they unveil, because he's wondering after he climbed the ladder, actually, now I'm on this ladder, what am I reaching for? And Ted DiBiase reveals, of course, that in the briefcase with these gods, and opens it up, it's the million-dollar championship. Grimes versus LA Knight is for that on Sunday. And I can't wait, Amphlett.
I can. The ladder looked good. I like the gold ladder with the dollar signs on it. I wasn't feeling much of this week. Sorry. Like, I just, like, fine. I'm with Sidgwick completely on, like, I'm absolutely, I was exhausted with ladder matches last year. Like, I don't need any more, let alone one per takeover. Like, I wasn't doing backflips when Shawn Michaels slid one in the ring, and there was more logic for that one with two belts with the cruiserweight titles than there was for this one, you know? I have more concerns that this is going to be an attempt at a good match rather than playing to the actual strengths of the people involved.
I like the segment, just the threat of the ladder match, because what you're going to get is two guys who realistically should be pulling each other's pants down, grabbing the tights, like trying to just be the biggest dickheads possible to each other in the one occasion where an all-heel feud actually kind of works in NXT. And the ladder is going to instead be this dry, drab thing that Vic Joseph screams over. And I'm thinking, you've just lost the plot. You've made the ideal beats of this feud, and then you've kind of half undermined them on one night. But I was just pissing myself too much to care about what happens on Sunday. I'll complain on Sunday. I was not complaining tonight.
I think I've got you
last night, this morning, whenever I watched the show.
I think I've got you finish for this match, by the way. They're both climbing the ladder, both going up either side. LA Knight realizes, oh my God, Cameron Grimes is going to get there. I'm going to have to take a shortcut. Goes for the low blow. Cameron Grimes looks down, smiles at him, and pulls out massive one of Bill's. That's his cock block. And then caving off the ladder to LA Knight, giving the $1 million championship and send me home happy.
Chapter 812 of Adam Wilborn's incredibly not viable fantasy booking ideas. Usually he tries to just make the wrestlers defy the laws of physics. This time I'm meant to, like, he's meant to control like loads of paper, you know, like under his balls and like not have them come out of his pants. Jesus, Wilborn, like, great ideas. You're like Vince Russo, I think.
Don't give me that.
When people talk about shoving socks down the tights, you didn't mean it was like full of quarters.
But as I alluded to earlier, we got the Ever-Rise announcement here. They are hosting the pre show. They also on camera do the following advertisement is paid for by Ever-Rise. Literally see one of them doing that. And he goes, it's the show before the pre-show. That's what they're going to be hosting. And if you didn't know, now you know. And the other one goes, that's not our catchphrase. He goes, it's a great catchphrase. I like it. Ever-Rise rules. More of this. More of them on every bloody show. They should be on the pre-show, let alone the bloody pre-show, Sige.
Yes, absolutely. I continue to be amused without further comment by Ever-Rise.
They get them. Like, whoever's working with them on this, they all get it. They all know exactly what this act is, and that's a nice feeling when you're watching that happening in wrestling.
We got the grizzled young veterans in action next against August Gray, and I'm going to butcher this name. Hero. Hero wrestled in a sports coat, which is unique, I'll say that. At one point, Zach Gibson tries to rip off the jacket and that just makes him fire up even more. They target his leg, though. Midway through the match, you've got Ciampa and Thatcher. They come down with folding chairs. They sit and they're just there to enjoy the match. They're not there to interview. They're just enjoying it. That distracts the vets. That allows August Gray to get back in control. He soon gets cut off, though. Ticket to Mayhem. 1, 2, 3. Grizzled Young Veterans post-match shout at them and say, look, we're done with you. We're setting our sights on the tag titles. And Ciampa says, no, you've got to go through us first. And they hoy their chairs at the Grizzly Young Veterans, who respond by saying, all right, next week, how about we have a match? But it's not a tag match. It is a tornado tag match. Ciampa and Thatcher accept. Thatcher says he can't wait to break their bones, basically. Grizzly Young Veterans dodge out of the ring when they come in. And that's going to be a sensational match. I feel like next week, and again between these four gentlemen, Sige.
Yeah, don't have any thoughts on the match. Hero will get a big reaction from fans. It's kind of just been doing nothing to zero fanfare on 205 Live. I suspect that will change, and he will become a sentimental favourite big time when fans return into the tornado match. To a degree, I think these guys are probably better in the traditional. Like, they're not the teams I would personally use this stip for. Like, MSK certainly would be my first choice if they were going to do this particular match, but maybe they've got an idea for it. I can't tell if this is deliberate, given the kind of person he is, or it's just a byproduct of the kind of person he is. But Timothy Thatcher's inability to like sell the fact that he has a catchphrase, because that's something like a sports entertainer would do, just pop me a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've said it before, and I'm saying it again now. I can't wait to break your limbs. Like, is that on purpose? Him just not having catchphrase and is in wrestling, or is it just him? I'd like to think it's just him.
I thought all of this was terrific. Gray, I'm reliably informed from a tiny bit of research on Twitter about 10 minutes before this podcast, that Gray and Hero are very well regarded on 205 Live, as much as that sounds like a contradiction in terms. And I could sort of see why.
Regard well.
Yeah, well, like, I could sort of see why from the short burst I got here. And I really love the Grizzly Young Vets Thatcher Ciampa feud. Love it. It's been relatively simple. They've spotted the obvious story that you can tell between two teams just like this. And they've given me a match I want to watch, and then they've actually booked it for television for next week. Something to look forward to. they've done, NXT's done a lot more of this lately, and like, it is genuinely to the credit, they're getting lots of characters over, almost none of them have got nothing to do, and by and large, like, they have a good understanding of what warrants television and what warrants takeover, and this is honestly something that I can sit for a week and like relish the prospect of next Tuesday.
Little vignette with Bobby Fish training, saying he's not forgotten. He's still got his sights set on Oney Lorcan. And then Candice LeRae storms down to the ring. She's still pissed off by Poppy. She cuts a promo on her. She calls them, as you alluded to earlier, Sige, Index, Hartwell and Loomis. But she blamed Poppy for Hartwell leaving the building tonight. Poppy gets full entrance. Of course she does. She comes out. She says, I don't wrestle, but I know someone who does. And it is the return of Io Shirai. My God, have I missed her and that theme as well. She runs down to the ring. She attacks Candice LeRae. Tiger faint kick, missile drop kick. That sends LeRae out of the ring. And Shirai stands tall alongside Poppy as LeRae bails. Oh, great to have her back, Camflet.
Yeah, far better, obviously, use of Poppy here. It's like, I know, like, it'll sound like I'm just being a big head because I wanted this actual match, but like, Poppy and Io Shirai really do have great chemistry. So it is a shame in the way that perhaps she's got no interest in wrestling, because you think Io's going to get a partner and go for the tag belts. And it's almost a shame that somebody is going to maybe feel secondary compared to Poppy as a good first choice. Love the booking though. Love it. I wouldn't say it's quite as seamless as John Moxley moving from fighting for the world title to fighting for the tag titles, but I'm getting a similar vibe like off it. And Shirai having like earned beef with LeRae because of this Poppy stuff is going to feed nicely into her finding a partner for what should be like a quality tag feed. Like, I like, all around great, this.
Yes, I'm not a big, I'm not as Poppy daft as Michael Hanford, but anything vaguely connected to Shirai versus LeRae, absolutely bring it on. I was getting a bit tired watching this. It's good. It was good. But we've talked at length at this. There are certain things that just don't have the same weight in pandemic era wrestling, and the return is one of them, unfortunately.
I think what you've potentially built in the background is, so like, obviously the heels are probably going to have this 2-on-1 advantage for a little while, and it provides this perfect opportunity for maybe like a Zoe Stark.
Yeah.
You know, this like mutual respect that's built up between the two. I get the genuinely like put loads into this, thought through what's going to happen when Io Shirai isn't the champion, and that gets you to this point. And it's just nice to see that happening again in NXT.
It would be a very WWE thing to put them, Saray and Shirai together. One of those things where it's like, I know why you're doing it, and it's not good that you're doing it, but it's also, I would love to see them team together. Yeah. they'll get away with it.
From the second biggest return of the night to the biggest, we saw Doc Hendricks again. Another Slam Jam update on TakeOver. That just reminded me to Google that picture of him at Ric Flair's wedding with his pink suit and his bum bag. I didn't even realise, you know, there's that famous photo of like Flair and Taker and Michael Hayes. There's also another one where he's dancing with the bride, and it's like, do you want to take the bum bag off for Dancing with the Bride, Mike? Nah, leave it on. Might need something in the midst of dancing with Ric Flair's new wife. If you haven't seen it before, go and look for it, because it's spectacular. But let's move on next to Ember Moon versus Dakota Kai, of course, ahead of Ember Moon facing Raquel Gonzalez for the NXT Women's Championship at TakeOver at the weekend. Didn't get a satisfactory finish to this, a clean finish, but I felt like, as much as we said that we didn't want this to happen, it still kind of achieved its goal. I'll talk through what happened and then I'll get your thoughts, Sige. Moon, you know, in control for large parts, but Kai is underhanded tactics, you know, trying to take control here. Poster before a commercial break. Moon fought back at one point and hit what looked like a code breaker. Kai gets Moon in the corner and hits her with a series of kicks, running boot as well. She puts Moon up on her shoulders, but Moon counters that and hits a power bomb. Then as Moon is sent outside, Gonzalez tries to attack her. She dodges that. She punches Raquel Gonzalez and then she comes back with a tope suicida on both Gonzalez and Kai, who are out there, and goes to finish Dakota Kai. She's got the match won by the looks of things. She's going for the eclipse on Dakota Kai when in comes Gonzalez and kicks her off the top rope. Referee calls for a DQ. Post-match, Moon brawls with Gonzalez and with Kai. Gonzalez picks her up. Looks like she's going to hit her with that one-arm powerbomb chokeslam thing, but Moon counters it, hits a jawbreaker, hits a huge eclipse on Gonzalez, knocks her out cold and stands tall. Like I said, Sige, not the clean win that we were hoping for, but I thought it still got to where it needed to in terms of getting us excited ahead of TakeOver and at least giving us that 1%. We all believe Raquel Gonzalez is retaining against Moon, but yeah, this was a nice way to suggest, you know, she's got a job on her hands on Sunday.
I'll give them one bit of credit for thought in an otherwise thoughtless, functional to a goddamn fault match come angle. They've built an ear for quite well twice, I think, with this choke bomb stunner reversal. The extent to which it was sold was deliberate, I think, with the idea being that they are going to get an ear fall out of that on in your house. And it'll be great. It will be great. I continue to just really enjoy watching Ember Moon's low pay. It's great. There are too many bad suicide dives, topes, low pays in pro wrestling. And Ember Moon has, I wouldn't say one of the very best, because Allen and Phoenix just have the best ones, but like a damn good upper echelon one. Otherwise, what a boring development. That's me. Can't handle it.
I think something with Ember Moon, she's like, I'm willing to say now that like those first few matches back, she's managed to shake off that rust. Mm. Like, I'm willing to call it ring rust, because I've enjoyed her work a lot more lately. Those tag matches with Shotty got better, so you were allowed to like make a bit of time for them developing a bit of chemistry together, which they appear to do. Thought she was good here. Will absolutely buy her. Look, like AEW have raised standards, and it is for the better. You can feel it in the way that people criticise WWE television, main roster, and you can feel it just the same when you get a finish like this. There was similar criticisms of the finish to the opener last week. You're building it with an angle, and there's sometimes where you've been like, so I'm beaten into submission of accepting this as a finish when you're dealing with another angle. But you can have both. You really can. Ember Moon should have beaten Dakota Kai here. Like, they should have done the exact same post-match after Ember Moon defeated Dakota Kai. Mm. And, like, having versions of that on... Like, we've been really critical of Dynamite lately for the amount of run-ins. So this is not some sort of, like, daft bias thing. This is... Because they're not getting, like, that element of it bang right or anything. But somebody's getting pinned. Somebody's tapping out or somebody's submitting. Like really, really frustrating, overwhelmingly so, to the point that like it ruins the impact of the match and an otherwise pretty decent like post-match as well. Like, the eclipse is awesome. So beat somebody with it and then tease that you're going to beat somebody else with it on the Sunday. Don't be so half in, half out all the time. I like that standards are higher enough that we can like start remembering to be more critical of this sort of stuff.
Right, let's get to this fatal five-way face-off fracas that was the main event. Karrion Kross before this are backstage saying, you don't have to wait till Sunday to get flatlined. Come on, don't make me in the ring. And then go to a break, come back, and William Regal's bollocking Karrion Kross. It's a good job he ignored him. Otherwise, this show would have ended on nothing, presumably. Regal says, I'm not allowing this to go on tonight. And Kross said, yes, you are. You're powerless. You don't run anything. This show is out of control and has been for a long time. He's not leaving until he fights everyone, until he kicks everyone's ass tonight. Kyle O'Reilly comes out. Cool, Kyle O'Reilly. He says that Kross is insecure. He's going to take his title. All he can do is talk gruff like that. And he says it's a matter of time before a guy like me, walks down here and takes that title from you. Johnny Gargano, perfect from him in terms of him coming out going, ooh, sick burns. And does he get in the ring? Does he bollocks? He jumps on the announce table. He says, Cross, are you going to let him talk to you like that when he's wearing a jean jacket? Tell you what you should do, Karrion. You should go and choke him out. And Cross says, you're a mark. Get in the ring. Outcome's pretty done. He says, I'm sick of all the talking. I'm tired of waiting around. No fighting. I want some fighting. It's time for me to become champion. And then Adam Cole appears on the video screen, calls them all chumps. Just brilliant. He says, I'm not going to show up because you're not bloody worth it. I've beaten all of you, basically. Karrion Kross, you're an idiot. You're too scared to face me alone. It's a good job you've booked this match because I'd have just battered you if it'd been one-on-one. I could beat any of them to become champion. I don't even have to pin Karrion Kross. O'Reilly, Michael Sidgwick, I'm alluding to what you made earlier, not saying this. O'Reilly called Cole a bitch for not being there in person. Thanks, Tuts. He says, that's not me. He walked over. Cross was like, who are you then? And he slapped the taste out of Cross's mouth. Big brawl. All the security get involved. Blah, blah, blah. Everyone eats a Saito suplex, whether they are involved in the Fatal 5-Way or they are just security. Eventually, security get hold of Karrion Kross, though. That allows Gargano and Dunn to attack him, super kick him. O'Reilly gets involved, knocks everyone down. He stands tall. Psych! He gets that hidden blade forearm from Karrion Kross to knock him out. It looks like Karrion Kross is going to stand tall ahead of TakeOver when all of a sudden he is jumped by one Adam Cole, who was there. The video was just a little trickster move. He super kicks Kross. He hits him with the last shot. He picks up the NXT title. He is the one who stands tall as the show goes off the air and he yells, Adam Cole, baby! What do you think of this as a go-home angle, Hamflet?
Mostly rubbish, but put the belt on Adam Cole on Sunday because he's such a bigger star than the rest of them and crowds are coming back. And if you can't have him as a babyface, at least have him as your headliner that the fans can like be so excited to have that back. The takeover that presumably is going to come the night before SummerSlam, give them that. Give them Adam Cole defending the title in the main event because it's going to be the closest thing to what those paying like punters want. Everyone, like other than Gargano, who shows arse and is a dweeb on purpose. Like, and his line was great about the jean jacket stuff and about avoiding the fight. Everybody else, I thought, came across like a total loser here, apart from Cole. And it worried me slightly that he got to win the segment because typical rule is that he's not going to win the match. But he won the segment so profoundly. Like, he put himself so profoundly above everybody else that I couldn't really buy anybody else winning on Sunday. Gargano's lines were the only other things I liked about this. And this kind of like, I didn't want to like just spoil all this talking about it at the start, but this, I found like the inconsistency is really annoying because he wasn't that in the opening segment. He was all fists and fire with Pete Dunne. And I thought they betrayed that a little bit because they just forget what they're doing sometimes, these characters. Like, because the lines are so blurred between heels and faces, you basically got to change tact based on what segment you're in. Gargano could be this in this one, but he had to be willing to have a street fight with Pete Dunne in the opener. And I just, like, all those inconsistencies happen like quite a lot. O'Reilly's like cool Kyle when he wants to be, but then he's also having, he had a standoff with Kross earlier in this episode, didn't he? Nothing happened, but he kind of like, there was a pull apart sort of thing that we were led to believe stuff had gone on. I just like, I don't buy any of that. I buy Gargano because he plays it with such conviction. I buy Adam Cole because I believe him. I don't buy any of this otherwise.
Yeah, I think the only excuse you can make, and again, it's once, as we've said a few times here, it's us making the excuses for them of, well, maybe Gargano fought Dunn to fire him up so he would kickstart a brawl later and Gargano could just stand on the outside and not get involved with it. But that's a stretch, isn't it, Sidge?
Yeah. it's all a bit of, you suck, I'm tough. You suck, I'm tough. You suck, I'm tough. I'm like, just build a goddamn babyface versus heel conflict once. One-on-one babyface versus heel conflict on this main event men's scene once because it's just tough dudes. Look at this. Tough guys being tough dudes. Look at us. I hate it. I just really hate the way they tell stories in this men's heavyweight division. I think it is rotten. I think it's characterless. And Pete Dunne, like, don't care. Sick of the talking. Well, why did he decide to become? Why did he sign with WWE? Why did he decide to become an episodic TV wrestler? If every single week your contribution is, don't care, I just want to fight. Let's go to the social club. Become a I don't know. Like I was going to say, become a amateur wrestler. I don't think I've ever seen an amateur wrestler promo. Just do that. Like if you're not willing to If your character just simply doesn't care about anything except fighting, then, like, you're in the wrong company, pal. And you're not entertaining me at all. Wretched. Wretched NXT.
Irish Pete Dunne there.
Shut up, man.
But I am looking forward to TakeOver this weekend. I think
West Bromwich Albion.
Oh, f*** off.
We will, of course, be doing a preview ahead of TakeOver, myself and Hamflet, which will be out on Saturday. So make sure you listen to that ahead of TakeOver. And then me and Siege will be reviewing In Your House at some point on Monday. It's a very busy day for us, what with having to review Dynamite because the bloody schedule changes. And, of course, look ahead to Monday Night Raw, unless Sidgwick finds something and he's a bit too busy for that one. Right, this has been the NXT review. Let us know your thoughts ahead of off the back of the show and ahead of TakeOver on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, there you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, of course, for daily wrestling podcasts. But for now, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Daily Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.